Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, 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 hello. Great morning to you. It is Wednesday, July 29th, 2015. You have tuned into Couch Conversations. This show is an outreach of Blessed and Know It Ministries, virtual ministry for virtually everybody. Always available to you via our website, bakiministries.wix.com/Baki, or you can check us out on social media, Facebook, Google+, Vine, Twitter, Instagram. We are all across the world wide web, giving you hope, aspiration, and inspiration, reminding you that your life is worth living and living out loud. I'm your host, Rev J, and I'm excited you tuned in because it's going to be another wonderful episode. So in case you hadn't noticed, for the past few weeks, we have been on this family focus kick. And that's been our theme, our outlook, our uplook, family focus, because we see the need. We see the need to support families. We see the need to give people more tools that they can use in and of themselves to make sure that their family is moving forward and progressing in such a way that they continue to be a great example and that they're not just putting on a public face of okay and this is peaceful and this is how our family is, but even privately behind closed doors, we have the tools to make sure that our family unit is okay and that we are doing the best that we can with the tools that we have to make sure that, you know, our children are taken care of, our seniors are taken care of, we individuals are taken care of, because we're giving you guys the tools to help support you whatever stage you're on. Okay? All right. So we're just going to jump right in. Yesterday, oh my gosh, yesterday's show was so good, especially with the follow-up that came afterwards. Yesterday we talked about disciplining because this week we're kind of focused on parenting, and discipline is a very big thing. And so we did the little Facebook quiz. Well, it was a question. Responses we got were just like, wow, really? Scientifically, like the American Society of Pediatrics, they told, it was discussed yesterday on yesterday's show, that they're saying spanking is not it. You're trying to discipline your child, correct your child. Spanking is not the way to go. On the Facebook, on Facebook's question of the day, we found out that 87% of people are still in support of spanking for younger children. Now, why is this? Is it because it's quote-unquote the norm? Is it because, there's a lot of different reasons why it is. Like, it's what we know. We return to what's familiar. We may not be aware of other options. We may just be too tired to deal with it. Or is it because it works? We found a couple of different articles to support the fact that it still works. Like, as an effective deterrent to choice behavior, spanking still works. Now, is it the best form? No, no one said that. Is it a useful form? Yes, within limits. And so a couple of people, and so just the yes or no, they added some details with it. Some people said, no, I've never spanked my kids. And if I had known the person who said this, I'd be like, you lying. But I know her, and I've seen the wonderful job that she's doing with her kids. And she's got a set of twins, and she's got a high schooler. And so she's like, no, I've never spanked my kids. She's used alternate methods of discipline that are working for her and for her family. And I'm like, wow. And I applaud her, and I'm like, woohoo. I will admit that there have been times when my kids were younger that, yes, you got spanked, and if your mouth was reckless, you're going to get hit in your mouth. And later on, I'm going to follow up with a talk or a discussion. And sometimes spanking was the go-to method, and I wanted to, but then I had to take a step back and be like, mm. And as, you know, our knowledge grows and our kids get older, and we want to be creative in our parenting techniques, so we don't want to just be the dictator. We don't want to come off as repeating something that slave masters did years ago. You know, we come up with other alternatives. I think one of the main things with disciplining, because if discipline comes from the word disciple, which means to teach, what are we really teaching through our discipline methods? And before we can teach anything to our kids or to anyone else, we have to look for the why behind the behavior. Sometimes there are patterns of inappropriate behavior. And so we, as the parent, the adult, have to look for the why. Is your child upset about something else? And so this is how they're acting it out. Was there a bad day at school? Perhaps is your child stressed out about family problems? Are they tired? Remember, I said that yesterday, too. Are they hungry? These explanations, no, they're not meant to excuse the behavior, but there is usually a cause. For every cause, there is an effect, and the effect could be the lashing out of negative behavior or choices, which then leads you to want to discipline in a physical way. But if we look for the why, we can understand the behavior and then address the why, so we can decrease the negative behavior. All that happens, though, when we take the time to know our kids, to really sit down and watch them and interact with others, listen to them when they talk to us, you know, pop-up visits at school, know your kids. These are your kids, your children, your offspring, and you are responsible for their well-being. So you're responsible to make sure they have food on the table, they have clean clothes on their backs, that their bodies are clean, that you are teaching them the hygiene and stuff, but you're also teaching them discipline through discipline. So you have to look for the why of the behavior. So you have to look at your techniques to figure out what's working, what's not working, why it's not working. And it is okay to include your children in those conversations because, believe it or not, our little geniuses really are that. They are so much smarter than we give them credit for, and they're able to tell you, well, I only acted out to get you mad. I like seeing you mad. It's funny. So now your anger has become a source of amusement. Really? How are you acting when you're angry that they'll take whatever discipline you're offering because the reward is they still get to see you upset? They know that they can control you by acting a certain way. So you're telling me you're allowing a 7, 8, 9-year-old to control you, the adult, the 30-something-year-old? Does that make sense? No. And it's not that we're supposed to be controlling them, but in a way we are, but in another way we're supposed to be guiding, protecting, and leading them. And we can't do that effectively if we haven't built the relationship up. So if you're the step-parent, your disciplining should be very slim if you have not built the relationship. If you're the new adoptive parent, slim if you have not built the relationship up. It's just like, again, any other relationship, you have to build up the trust. It's like dating. You have to get to know the person, and you have to figure out why is this person doing this. And if you're the common denominator, it's okay for it to be you, but then you need to make the necessary changes with you. So one of the best discipline techniques is role modeling. What? Yes, self, you. Get the mirror out. Look in the mirror, in your own eyes, and figure out what's going on with you. If your child is, quote, unquote, lazy, won't do anything, when's the last time your child has seen you do something extra? I go to work, I provide, I don't have to do such and such. Okay, granted, you may do that. But also, to see you in a position of working in the home, or to say, hey, let's make this a team effort. If I clean the baseboards, you guys mop the floor. If you guys sweep, I'll do the dishes. And make it part of a team situation so the child doesn't get some, does not feel some sort of way about doing it and sees that the responsibility is a necessity for the whole team. Because you can't, it's hard and it's difficult to come in when someone's 15, 16, 17 and be like, all right, wash the dishes, clean the house, do the laundry, and you're giving them this list of chores. Like, that's all you have to do. You're a child. Okay, fine and good. That sounds good. But one, have you taught them how to do it? Have you made these moments teachable moments, or are you just telling them how? Or are you just telling them to do it? Okay, so dishes, are you incorporating this? Like, could this really be your time to really talk to your teenager and get to know them better? Find out about their day, or are you just pushing them away so that you can get some more me time so that you can focus on social media or whatever reality shows on TV? See, the thing about it is if you set the example and set the bar and give the explanation of why we're doing this. I know a lot of people are like, I don't have to explain myself to a child. You're absolutely 100% right. You don't have to explain yourself to a child. You don't have to explain yourself to anybody. But as you mature in this thing and you're seeking children who will mature in their life, it would behoove you to explain the policies, practices, and procedures of the organization called family. When you start a new job, you go to something called orientation or training, and a lot of it is you sit down, you read the book. There's someone, some wonderful trainer is trying their best to explain the corporate policies and procedures to you. You're fading in and out. Why wouldn't your kids do the same thing? the kids who you created, who have your genetic makeup, are doing the same thing when you're talking about policies and procedures. But when you get onto the hands-on part of training, the trial and error part of training, that means the trainer has explained it, you have the book before you, and someone is showing you how, the how to do it. So you know the why, but the how is now shown. And for our kids, they're mostly hands-on visual learners. And so that whole talking and lecturing, yada, 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 it has its place, but I don't believe that it should be the primary form of any instructional thing. I think that we learn the best, I say 80% of people, through some hands-on hard work, get in the trenches with me, let me show you how it's done stuff. And when you can work with somebody and show them the how, after you've explained the why, you know the where at the house, you know, then you can start to build that team effort of, wow, oh my gosh, if mommy's willing to sweep, then yeah, I can come along and help, because it's important to us to maintain a clean house, because cleanliness is a beautiful thing. Keeps germs down, it keeps our house clean, keeps us protected. And as I learn how to take care of the house structure, and as I learn to take care of my body, these are life skills that I'll need for life. And no, we should not wait till they're teenagers to start teaching these things. Little kids like 2 and 3 can start with the sweeping and have age-appropriate chores and responsibilities, which also leads to what? More disciplined of a lifestyle. And then they can make what better choices, because we've given them the power of choice all along the way. And they can be analytical thinkers because you've taught them the process. We have a society of kids who follow anything. For real. No, seriously. The music that they're listening to, it doesn't have to make sense. It doesn't have to rhyme. It doesn't have to have a reason. It just has to have a nice beat. Something they can twist and shake and bop and drop to, and they're all over it. And then we're vying for their attention versus what society is giving them. And a lot of times we are losing the battle because we have not been proactive in our discipline choices, and we're reverting back to something that's familiar and easy to do. It's quick and it's easy to inflict pain, quote-unquote discipline, through a spanking. Sit down, shut up, da-da-da. These are the same kids who's like, I just wish you would say mommy. And once they start saying mommy, then you're just like, don't call my name anymore. I'm going to shut up and don't say nothing else. So how do we get from, oh, how curious you are, to you are getting on my nerves? How do we get there, and how do we pull back from that? I'm glad you asked. We do have to know the why behind the behavior. We do have to build the relationship with the child. And then sometimes we just have to give the child a break. You're 9. There are just certain things that a 9-year-old will do. And some of us, we forget. You know, some of us have had kids later on in life, and we've forgotten what 9 was, that that's an adventurer age, that I'm pushing all sorts of limits. I'm pre-hormonal. I'm coming off of cartoons. I'm looking at the world in a different way. I'm thoroughly convinced that everything you're saying is totally wrong, because it doesn't match up anything I'm seeing on TV, hearing on the radio, listening to on my phone. You've got to be the craziest person ever. Oh, my gosh, Mom, just leave me alone. And we're like, what? So we've got to somehow figure out a way to give our kids a break from electronics, a break from the lecturing, a break from, quote-unquote, their reality. Send them off to summer camps and day camps and grandparents who live far away and trusted family members who live away, so they can see something different, experience something different in life. Your way is not the only way. And a lot of times when you do that, your children come back with another sense of appreciation for what they have at home. Send them out to volunteer someplace at senior centers or daycares or whatever. Just send them out in the community and let them see just how good they have it, and let them see that it could always be something different, that they shouldn't look down on others, because you never know the situation that you're going to be in. But if we're not giving them the opportunity to see it, all they know is their little world and their little bubble, and that's not the end-all, be-all to the whole great picture of the world. We're not giving them a local or global or international perspective because we've isolated them so much. And I'm saying, what does this have to do with discipline? Oh, it has a lot to do with discipline, Because, again, if discipline comes from disciple, and it means to teach, and you're showing this, and they get to go off and see and hear other stories of kids their age, peer-to-peer interaction, and they're hearing just how, quote-unquote, sane your family is in comparison, then they have a whole nother level of appreciation for what you are bringing to the table. I've had great opportunities to work with kids all the way from infancy to 21. And throughout that, when they get into certain situations, it's a common theme. I wanted attention. I wanted affection. I thought I knew more, especially when you work in residential, to hear the stories of the kids who, quote, unquote, shouldn't be there. But they thought that they knew more, and they thought that the lifestyle that was calling them was better than the lifestyle that they were growing up in. And some of them are like, I don't really know how I got here. I thought my dad was crazy. But then I got on the streets, and I found out that life at home really isn't that bad. And some of them do need to be there because parents are going crazy and crazier and crazier. Like there's a competition for I could be the craziest parent in the world and do all sorts of things to my kids and cause them all sorts of hardship and take out all my frustrations of the world on my kids who didn't even ask to be here. And so when you have all of that mixed into a living environment together, the perspective is a lot of kids get it. And by the age of 10, 11, 12, they're saying, when I have kids, it's not going to be this way. And the unfortunate thing is, if we don't give them enough support during those years where they're framing out how they want to live their life, unfortunately, many of them will repeat the mistakes of their parents, the negative choices of their parents, because chaos has become normal to them. And when chaos is your normal, you will do things subconsciously and consciously to create chaos. Because that's normal to you, and then you could be at peace. I've seen kids pick fights at the end of the day before they go to bed because they need to hear screaming and arguing and yelling because that's normal to them. That's how they grew up. And so because that's normal, that's what I have to create, because if they're not going to do it, let me go ahead and create that so that I can hear that. And that becomes their lullaby so that they can feel comfort because it's normal and I can go to sleep. Now, to most of us, that seems absolutely absurd. But what are we exposing our children to while we're frustrated and upset? What are we exposing our children to when we get out of control? What are we really saying to our kids when we are hitting them out of anger? What are we saying? What kind of norms are we setting for them when we choose certain discipline methods over the other discipline methods? We're saying this is the norm. This is what I want you to continue. This is the legacy of our family. We are this, that, and the other. And for some parents, it means, hey, we are abusers. And I'm going to hit you till I see a bruise or a whelp or a mark. Then I know that you got it. Not the fact that you're crying, you're cowering in the corner, you're hiding from me. None of that matters. I need to see a mark on you. And, yes, I beat you because my mama beat me. What? And you go ask grandma, why did you beat him? Because my mama beat me. And that's all they know. So at 2015, we are now left with the question, I guess, do we want to continue to do what we know, or do we want to get better? Do we want to try some other things? And remember, you can't just try it once, but, oh, that didn't work. I took away this. It didn't work. Consistent. So that, again, goes back to you. When we look at the whys behind the behavior, if you're the common denominator, what are you doing? What type of discipline are they seeing you interact or seeing you put in place for yourself? Are you disciplined enough to say, hey, I got this doctor's report and I can totally change everything on a negative side of my health if I change X, Y, and Z, my eating, my drinking, and my activity? But nah, I won't do that. I'd just rather pop these 15 pills or whatever the course may be for you. If they see you do it, and they interact with you and you make them part of the decision-making process and you tell them the why behind it, there will be less opportunities for them to say, I didn't know. I didn't know. Why? I don't know. What are you doing? I don't know. I don't know. You are fully aware. You are fully aware of what you are doing and how you are doing it because you're smart enough to know better. And now that you know better, you can do better, and it will take consistency, and it will take support, and it will take role modeling, and it will take relationship you have purposely taken time to bond with each of your children, to know them, and to allow them to know you. You are not so standoffish and been hurt by so many people that you don't allow your children to know you. That's one of the greatest disservices we do as parents. A lot of us want to present ourselves as picture perfect and growing up was perfect, and we don't want to say what really happened in the household, or we're not telling kids the truth of why your uncle so-and-so can't come to any family functions. Find the truth, make it age appropriate, and tell the kids the truth. Because once they have truth, then they can start to make decisions for themselves. Then they can also understand the whys behind behavior. But if we're not operating in truth and we're trying to paint some sort of picture that never was, because that's the great thing about truth, it will always rise to the surface, especially if you're saying 1 + 1 = 2. And you come to find out that the person never had one or the other one. They had a bunch of halves and they made it to two, or they had a bunch of quarters and they kind of pasted together and it was two. Because when you raise a bar so high for a child and you're holding them to a fictitious image that no one in the family has ever been able to do and you yourself aren't able to do, the best way to do it is to get there together and be truthful about it. Do not be the parent who says, do as I say, not as I do, because that form of stuff, it doesn't work either. So we're filled up with a bunch of stuff that doesn't work. We know that there are negative effects to the stuff that we are doing. So now we have to choose for ourselves, do I want to continue with the stuff that's hurtful, or do I want to do something that's helpful, that's beneficial? What type of legacy am I leaving? Am I going to leave the abusive legacy? Or am I going to leave the creative legacy? And am I going to help them solve their problems? Or am I going to solve all problems for them? When my daughters were like infants, I tried very hard to make sure there was no need for them to cry. As infants, you are dry, you are fed, you are hugged, you are loved, I'm rocking you. Why are you crying? What sense does it make for you to still be crying? But I had to look at the child like, wait, do you just want to cry? That's what you want to do right now? That, as an infant, that's your choice? If I'm meeting all your concerns, I've flipped you over, I looked at this side, I looked at that side, I'm wiped, I've done everything that the handbook and the people say I should do, and you're still crying. Why? Because it gets a reaction out of me. And so even as toddlers, what would they do? They start crying. Why? To get a reaction out of me. And so later on in life, I personally have issues with the whole crying. Why are you crying? Because I wanted you to come see about me. I wanted you to check on me. Why didn't you just call me and ask me, why are you crying? I don't see the reason behind the crying. But because I was giving them the reward of attention, the crying continued. When they stopped getting that attention for something they didn't need, like, you could get the need met in another way. And I had to teach them that, and then I had to learn myself, like, wait, every time she cries, she does not need you to jump and fly across the room or the house to check on her. Maybe she's doing it for attention. And if something was really wrong, they know how to come and get you. Like, my children have never been hospitalized, no broken anything. And so the crying, what are you doing that for? Why are we doing this? It gets your attention, and you come quicker that way. If I call you, you don't come as quick. Wow, really? That's, wow, you figured that out, huh? After 8 years, pretty smart, child. Okay. Why do you need my attention so bad? Nothing. I just wanted to see what you were doing. You just wanted to see what I was doing, really? Okay. Yep, you are definitely my child. And so if they want cuddle time or they want mommy time, they're creative enough to come up with ways to get that from me. And so I had to make sure that I was meeting the need before it got to the crying. So I need to make sure you're getting enough attention and affection and respect before it gets to the point you feel like you have to cry out for something that I should be giving you anyway. And a lot of these kids in residential or whatever treatment that they're in, they're crying out for something. They're on the corner for a reason. They're getting that attention and respect or whatever from the community and the other cliques and stuff. And if we're giving that to them at home because it's a basic need, at a certain point, they're going to get to the point like, you know, I really don't need the negative attention if I'm getting it in a positive way. And that's the other thing about discipline. It doesn't just have to be when they do something that breaks a rule. but they could be following something really well, and we need to make sure that we're giving them just as much praise and attention and affection when they do stuff really well, because that helps give them a sense of balance even at the youngest age, so they can be like, oh, wow, I can still get attention and affection if I do something really well, I do something really good. Growing up in the church that I did in Virginia, I was an honor roll student. And so we had a new pastor come in, and him and his wife were just like, honor roll is the best thing ever, and we're going to give you something every 6 weeks that you bring home honor roll, and you bring us your report card and show us honor roll. What? I'm getting attention in front of everybody? Oh, definitely. I'm going to stick with this whole honor roll thing. And so what? Every 6 weeks, I'm like, yes, I got honor roll. And then I get like a little, like a comb set, a mirror set, lip gloss. And it didn't really matter. It was the fact that I was up in front of people and I was getting excited. And people were like, yay, good job, great job. And even afterwards, it continued, keep up the good work. And it was still attention and it was affection and it was support for the positives. So oftentimes, our kids end up in like the judicial system. And we flock down to courthouses and we flock down to the lawyer's office and we're having family meetings and reunions and all sorts of negative stuff. When our kids do positive things, are we there with the same amount of support? When they're at their first baseball game or basketball game, are we there? If their team makes it to the championship, have we been there the whole way, explaining like how proud we are of their effort? If they never make it to any championship, are we still how proud we are because they participated in something? Are we giving them that same light? See, be careful what you're shedding light on, because if you're shedding light just on the negative, and children like light, what's going to happen? They're going to start gravitating more towards the negative. And if you have multiple kids in a home and a child is all, quote-unquote, always in trouble, is getting all of your attention. I just don't know what we're going to do about Jimmy. Jimmy just can't get right. And every conversation is about Jimmy. And you got another child in the corner like, hey, having that Shrek moment, oh, pick me, pick me, oh, pick me, hello, I'm over here doing something, pick me. But you're all focused on Jimmy. How are we going to get bail money for Jimmy? How are we going to get a lawyer for Jimmy? How are we going to get this for Jimmy? And poor Janice is in the corner like, forget it. If Jimmy gets all the attention, I might as well start doing negative stuff too. Then you're like, you're just like your brother. I don't understand why you have to do the same dumb choices. Well, let's see. Where was the attention? Where was the light? On Jimmy and his negative choices. And the light wasn't shared equally for Janice and her good choices. So it's really no wonder how Janice ended up over there. Then we ended up with adult children who don't come back home for holidays, who don't call and check in on a regular basis. Why? Because you didn't give them that stuff or that training when they were younger. So don't really ask why they're acting and responding the way they are as adults, because you had a hand to play in that. So when you start to change and adjust your behavior, your attitude, and come back with the apologies, even for your adult children, say, wow, I understand, or I see why you did such and such. I take the responsibility. I didn't do, or I didn't provide, or I didn't give you the tools that you needed to know that keeping constant communication or to know whatever the case may be. I apologize. Remember, we talked about that. The apology from the parent can heal all sorts of wounds, especially when it's followed up with corrective behavior. And that works for toddlers, for teenagers, for adult kids, for seniors, whatever stage you're in. The apology, the corrective behavior will heal and mend. I'm sorry, and you're not accepting the responsibility for your choices doesn't do anything. So today we're going to look for the why. We're going to give our kids a break for being kids, and we're going to look in the mirror. What am I doing, or how am I contributing to this situation right here? What have I done to lead to this pattern of behavior? What patterns have I set forth? How am I disciplining myself and showing them how that works so they'll be able to make the same or similar or at least better choices for themselves? Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and tomorrow we're going to conclude our series on discipline. I implore you to with the couch conversations, because we're giving you the tools that you need to live your life out loud and to support your family. As always, may the God of peace rest, rule, and keep you and your mind and your family. Now, henceforth, and forevermore, y'all have a great one. I'll talk to you tomorrow live at 7 a.m. Bye-bye.